across the Bell Talk Radio Network. And this is the Evan Solomon Show.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Happy Tuesday. We got a great show lined up for you today. But I got to begin with the Trump-Trudeau meeting that just happened. And I was watching it closely. And I'm here with Christy. And the rest of the Sunshine Band. Christy, great to see you. You know, do you got the mic on now?
Hello.
Oh, there you go.
We're good. We figured it out.
Trump-Trudeau. First of all, you know, I tell you something. When Trudeau first met Trump in their very first meeting, you know, he practiced the handshake. Because you remember that whole thing where Trump would grab people's hands at first? So I know from sources that they actually worked on Trudeau's handshake. How are you going to do it? And sources have told me that they literally were in a back room gripping each other. Squeeze here. Put your hand on your shoulder. Because it was a power play. And they literally went through how to shake the president's hand and not look like an idiot. Now they have this kind of love-in, this bromance love-in, and they're at the NATO meeting. Now, here's the thing. Trudeau knows, folks, that Trump is going to ask him how much does Canada spend on the military, because NATO long ago signed this aspirational, it's not a binding thing, but an aspirational get, which was you got to spend 2% of your GDP on the military. That's a lot of money. And Canada's right now not at 2%. We're at 1.37, so we're not even close, right? And will we ever get to 2? The answer is no. And I'll tell you why. But it made for some awkward moments. Because how much do you think we spend on our military? It's the largest spend of a department. So how much do you think we spend, Christy? Do you have any idea what we spend on the military?
No clue. No clue at all.
We spend $26 billion a year. $26 billion. Now, and that's 1.27% of our GDP.
Yep.
Right? Now, just out of interest, the United States spends about almost 3.42. Bulgaria, 3.25. Greece, 2.28. The UK, 2.14. Estonia, 2.1. Romania and Lithuania and Latvia and Poland. Those are the only countries in NATO that spend over 2. Then you get the under 2s. France, 1.84. I'm not going to read everyone. Portugal, 1.52. Germany, 1.38. And then Canada, 1.31 at best. But Trump had this awkward moment with Justin Trudeau where he literally demanded the number. And here's what, listen to this. Listen to what happened here.
What are you at? What is your number?
The number we talk about is 70% increase over these past years, including, and for the coming years, including significant investments in our fighter jets, significant investments in our naval fleets. We are increasing significantly our defense spending from previous governments that cut.
Okay. Where are you now in terms
Trump,
of
now
your
Trump
number?
Presses him.
We're at 1.3. 1.4. And continuing to move forward.
Okay. Trump presses him. Where are you now? Oh, and he says 1.4. We're not at 1.4. We're just not. We were at 1.4 for 1 year, but we're at more like 1.3 or 1.27. Now, I spoke to a number of experts today to try to get some truth about it, because that's my job, right? Like, what are we going to do? And Dave Perry, who's a very smart guy, who is the vice president of Canadian Global Affairs Institute and a guy that is an expert on this, I said, is this number 70%? Where is he getting this number that we're increasing 70%? And he said, well, they're counting different things. NATO has now allowed us to count various different things in what we pay for our military, right? So we, if you want to really understand it, Canada in the last number of years has a new policy called Strong, Secure, and Engaged. And indeed, it does say that we will increase annual defense spending from where we are now to $32.7 billion over 10 years. That is the increase of 70%. And you have to dig through the national defense to really find that. So we now have $25.5 billion, and now we're going to move up to $32 billion. What would that take us to? So in 10 years, what would that would still be 1.4%. We're never coming close to 2%. You know why we're not doing that? Because it would be another $18 billion. And I'm now we need a Blue Water Navy. It's underfunded. We have to buy military jets. But does anybody out there think that we have $18 billion more? Let me just give you. Indigenous Services Canada gets $6.5 billion. Canada Revenue Agency, $6 billion. Right? There's no way a liberal or conservative government has another $18 billion to throw around. So then I was asking, what about this 70% increase that the liberals have announced? That will be true, but you got to count a whole bunch of other things. They're funding everything in that. Pensions. They're counting every possible thing because NATO has changed what you're allowed to count. Did you know that? So it used to be you could only account for certain things in your expenditures on defense, but now everyone's trying to up their count because Trump's putting pressure on them. And the truth is now we've got, as Ian Hansen, an independent defense and security analyst, wrote in McLean's magazine, you know, it's true. We're spending more, but because we're allowed to. The definition was updated to include, from NATO in last year, all payments, including pensions, made by national governments to meet the needs of their armed forces. So everything on veterans benefits, death benefits for survivors, RCMP expenses for peacekeeping. All, quote, all the costs borne by other government departments when they support the Department of National Defense. That's another $5 billion. So it sounds like we're spending a lot more, but in reality, are we? I should say that 70%, Harjit Sajjan, the defense minister, said, we're operationalizing 16 new fixed search and rescue aircraft. We're upgrading our light armored vehicle fleet. We're going to have a contract to replace the CF-18 fleets with 88 new jets. That hasn't happened for years. So there are some things going on. But Trump looked at Trudeau and Trudeau fumbled the ball. He said, oh, it's up 70%. And you know what? It's easy to say to Trudeau he blew it. He should have had these numbers off the top of his head. And he shouldn't have said 1.4 when it's not 1.4. But there is no Canadian government that's got $18 billion lying around for defense. There just is not. And so when Trudeau was put on the spot at the NATO summit by Donald Trump, we still contribute a lot, but we ain't getting to 2%. And you tell me, and I love supporting our men and women in uniform, there's just no government, conservative or liberal, and to be fair, the liberals have increased spending compared to the conservatives, that is going to hit that 2%. But when we come back, there's a crazy idea that the former finance minister, John Manley, a liberal, has said, you know what we should do to make good with China? We should do a prisoner exchange. We'll give them back Meng Wanzhou, and they can give us the two Canadians held in prison. I'm going to tell you why this is the craziest idea. And I respect John Manley. I could not disagree more with that. It would reward China in a way we can't. And Bob Fife from the Globe and Mail is going to join me on that and other issues.
Welcome back to the Evan Solomon Show.
So yesterday, folks, I read this remarkable letter from the Huawei executive, Meng Wanzhou, and I, you know, can we cue the violins here? Because, you know, I feel so bad for her. She's stuck in what she says is such a horrible situation. She's in her $5 million mansion in Vancouver. And she wrote a letter saying that this being arrested in Canada is so good. She's reading novels and she loves nature and she's learned to enjoy her time. She thanked the correctional officers, but still the Chinese say she's suffering. And now let's stop the violins because the two Canadians who are almost a year into their internment don't have their reading glasses, so they can't read novels. The lights are on 24 hours a day. They're essentially being tortured. And now There's a solution from none other than John Manley, the former finance minister, a guy I like a lot, and I should say he works on the board of a telecom company that works with Huawei. And when he was on Question Period recently on CTV with me, he said, you know what the Canadians should have done when the U.S. had an extradition order and said, hey, if this woman comes to Canada because we have an extradition treaty, you got to pick her up, which is, I don't know, call me crazy, the rule of law. John Manley said, here's how you get around the rule of law.
It's possible that this would have been a good case for what you might call creative incompetence. This woman was not residing in Canada. She was simply transferring flights in Canada. And we might have just missed her.
Wow.
And
just to avoid being caught in the middle? Is that
why? Let me tell you, well, being caught in the middle, this is a big deal.
All right. I didn't think that. I mean, imagine, creative incompetence, just so we don't have to fulfill our extradition duties. Now he's got another proposal, which is a hostage swap. We give back Meng Wanzhou, and they give back... I just think this is the worst idea ever. And Bob Fife wrote a great story about this in the Globe and Mail. He's the Ottawa bureau chief for the Globe. And Bob is on the line with me now. Bob, let's talk about John Manley's. So first there was creative incompetence. He's got another idea now. What is it?
Well, his idea is that we do the kind of prisoner exchange that you used to see when East and West Berlin were separated between the communist side and the Western side. And there was a bridge where you would exchange prisoners. And Mr. Manley's view is that we should exchange Meng Wanzhou, take her from her $5 million dungeon I guess, in an airport or meet her somewhere else, and we exchange her with the two Canadians who have been locked up in jail cells with, as you mentioned, the lights on 24/7. My understanding of the situation after a year, that these two, Michael Korvac and Michael Spavor, their situation is pretty bad for them. I mean, not that they've been physically tortured, as far as I know, but it's just that being stuck in a jail cell with 24/7 lights on, no ability to talk to your family or anybody, frankly, except the odd consular visit, and you can, although they can write letters, has just taken an enormous toll on them. And meanwhile, as you pointed out with the music playing, she's reading novels, she's learning to paint. Life is pretty good for her. All she has to do is wear an ankle bracelet.
Oh, and go between her two mansions, and I should say she's got two different homes, and talk to her, and even she even thanked the correctional officers. I'm sure Mr. Kovrig and Spavor are not thanking their correctional officers in China, Bob.
But you know the problem we have here. Look, I have an enormous amount of respect for John Manley, and I know you do as well. But he was a former foreign affairs minister, former finance minister, former deputy prime minister. He's part of the old Chrétien guard, the old liberal guard that thinks, all we should do with China is trade with them, turn a blind eye to all the human rights abuses or the fact that we've got a million Uyghurs in a prison in concentration camps in China, that we should just get on with China because it's a growing economic power. And if we were to go along with this mad scheme, any time we ran into trouble with China or any other country, they'd just hold a hostage. They'd just take some people and hold them hostage until they get what they want.
It validates the idea that when we, instead of a rules-based law with some kind of dispute-settling mechanism that's fair and based on human rights, they'll say, oh, we don't like what you've done on your extradition treaty. We're going to pluck two Canadians off, dump them in a cell, wait for them to rot, and then we'll do a prisoner exchange. That would reward hostage-taking, as you wrote in your article, a former ambassador to China wrote about. I'm just, and again, I like John Manley a lot. I have a lot of time for John Manley. This just seems to reward a behavior that is contrary to the fundamental rule of law that Canada supposedly stands for, Bob.
Absolutely. I mean, there isn't anybody, any credible person would think that makes any sense at all, that we would do that kind of thing where you basically say you can hold anybody hostage, China, and when you hold them hostage long enough, we'll agree to whatever ransom you want. We can't operate like that, especially in a country that is growing more and more powerful economically, militarily, and it's increasingly becoming authoritarian. Do we really want to sanction this kind of foreign policy where Canada just if it wasn't China, it would be happening all over the world with Canadian citizens. They'd be holding people hostage, and then we'd have to exchange people.
So what, Bob, just outline. So you and I would agree. I mean, the exchanging hostages is, in my view, all due respect, John Manley, way offside, and it's the wrong message in the wrong thing to do. But today, Trudeau met with Trump. And Huawei will come up. The U.S. is cranking up the pressure on Canada. Do not let Huawei into your 5G, your fifth generation network. What is Trudeau going to do? Tell me what he's got to figure out here.
Well, that is a really hard decision that the government has to make. There is a dispute between the Canadian spy service, CSIS, and the Communications Security Establishment, which is the the cybersecurity over whether it's safe to allow Huawei into 5G technology. CSIS says we should ban them. CSE says we think we can manage this by not letting Huawei into the core networks and constantly checking their equipment. But more and more experts around the world are saying with 5G technology, and I won't get into it, complicated nature of the technology is that it makes it almost impossible to be able to do that. And the Americans have made it very clear that if their allies allow Huawei into 5G, that will not share some pretty sensitive intelligence with them. So the government has a really difficult decision, because if they ban Huawei from 5G, there's probably going to be more repercussions from China. If they don't, we're going to lose important intelligence from the United States, probably. So it's not an easy decision here.
No.
Also, John Manley, who sits on the TELUS board, and TELUS is one of the major users of Huawei equipment, as is Bell Canada, BCE. They want to be able to have Huawei because Huawei undercuts everybody. It's cheap. They sell their stuff cheap than Ericsson or Samsung or other telecom providers, and which is why they've gotten a hold on this market. Let me make this one point, because look what they've done with those two Canadians. What if we let them into our 5G and they say, okay, we're going to close down the network, we're going to close down the banks, we're going to close down the other forms of telecommunications in this country because they want to retaliate against us?
Yeah, and I would just say this. They're already dangling the carrots, as you've written. The founder, the billionaire founder and the father of Meng Wanzhou, has already said, I want to move a factory to Canada for jobs. And he said the thing that I thought was the most arrogant thing, I'm richer than the Canadian government. So, folks, if you think the Chinese government is not flexing its muscles, get ready. Bob, always a pleasure. Bob Fyfe, the Ottawa Bureau Chief for the Globe and Mail. Great to have you on the program, Bob. Coming up, this is an incredible story. There's a woman that she says people have fat phobia. She wants it in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. She joins us next.
This is the Evan Solomon Show.
Welcome to the program. Look, people who are overweight or obese feel like they're stigmatized. And Edith Bernier, who's a Quebec blogger, and she has something called a fat phobia blog. That's what she calls it. Grossophobie. And she has a petition to recognize weight-based discrimination in the Canadian and the Quebec Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And she joins us now. Edith, it is so great to have you on the program. Is fat phobia, as you call it, and weight discrimination something you've dealt with in your own life?
Well, I am personally a fat woman. I have been a fat person all my life. As an adult, I've been all my life considered what doctors would call obese, and that's not a word that I like And that's why I prefer using fat, because fat in the beginning was not a derogatory word.
Right. So tell me, like, is it, because I thought fat would be a bad word. When you said fat phobia, to be candid, I'm like, gosh, I don't know if I'm comfortable saying that
I
word.
I understand. And this is precisely why, you know, people go to obese or go to overweight, what we call, among activists, we call them the O words. The same way you have the F word that you don't want to say, well, we have the O words that we don't want to say. So, so we prefer using fat, because fat in the beginning was not an insult. It was not a bad word. It just meant plump. So this is.
So
you
if
know,
I said, I'm with Edith, she's fat, I'd be like, I would think that would be like, I would say if we're discussing this and in this subject on the radio, I would say, no, Edith is overweight, or Edith would be medically classified as obese. But I would honestly never use that word fat, because I think that would be derogatory.
Well, you could say she is a fat woman, or you could use probably something that's a little bit, you know, softer. She's a person of size.
What's wrong with overweight, just out of interest?
Well, overweight and obese, in both cases, those are medical words. People usually tend to think that using the scientific, the right word would be better. But in this case, it pathologizes the body as something that needs to be cured, as something that needs to be fixed. And size is not something that automatically needs to be cured or fixed, because it is not automatically. Someone who gains weight is not automatically someone who's not doing well. It could be someone recovering from something, just like someone losing weight could be someone who's suffering from something.
Right, but is obesity, as an example, medically it's used to mean that there might be health issues that are involved in that, heart issues, cardiac issues, and so they say someone's obese or morbidly obese. It's a term to try to, there is a medical element to it.
Well, the operative word here being might. It is, you know, size is a risk factor, just like age, just like heredity, just like your lifestyle overall. Are you a sedentary person, or do you do regular exercise? How balanced is your eating? You know, what are your habits in general? So size is a risk factor. It is true, but it's one among many others. Mm. And this is why, one of the reasons why we're fighting. I mean, among doctors right now, there is a higher prevalence of discrimination towards fat people or people of size, if it makes you more comfortable.
No, I'll go with your word.
Then towards, for example, people based on their ethnic origin.
So you grew up, I'm going to just say it, even though I got to tell you, I'm going to cringe when I say it, but I'm going to say it because this is the whole point of your blog. You mm-hmm. grew up fat. So
yes.
What kind of, oh God, I hate saying that. What I do, what kind of discrimination did you face?
Well, in school, for example, most of my elementary school and some part of my high school, I was bullied. And children growing up with obesity, because that's the technical word, have 63% more chance of being bullied. So I was part of those 63%.
You were bullied?
Yes, I was. And I don't want to build too much on this, because I think that I am a way more complex person than someone who was bullied when she was young.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm also a person who, in the hiring process, I mean, fat women like me, especially fat women, actually, are more discriminated in hiring practices. And they could their wage could be up to 16% less than their regular size counterparts, for example. That's the kind of thing that happens. I mean, I already spoke about the weight bias from health professional, but if you just look at the media for a second, popular culture has an issue with fat people. So the stigma, the bias keeps on going around no matter how hard we try. If you think of Samuel Tully in Game of Thrones, if you think of Scully and this other guy in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, if you look at Ursula in The Little Mermaid, I mean, fat people are not depicted in a very positive way. And I grew up in a society where my body is wrong, and I have about technically 30% of my body size that it can have an effect on. But when you consider that chances of success of diets are between 5% and 13% at best, then my 30% that can be managed on my body becomes very, very, very slim.
So what would it mean to add discrimination based on appearance to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in Quebec? What would that mean?
Well, it would mean that if someone is if someone loses their job, they're not hired for that or for a job simply because of their size and they can demonstrate it, that they can be protected by law, because right now we aren't. If someone receives health care of a lesser quality because of their size, and that's something that happens, doctors spend less time with their fat patients. So they could claim what's due, what belongs to them. We would have a better chance of becoming, of no longer being a second-class citizen, because right. This is a little bit of, you know, what's happening right now. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm very idealistic by sending this petition out there, but I know that this is not something that's going to change overnight, even if the petition is successful.
Do you get a lot of people pushing back and saying, look, Edith, this is a personal responsibility? That they associate being overweight.
Wrong.
Yeah, I know it is. Mm-hmm. But they're saying, like, why don't you just, you know, do X, exercise or go on a diet? Do you get a lot of that? And how do you respond to that?
Well, personally, I have made a decision a while ago when I started writing on the topic that I would not interact with people writing under, for example, articles that are shared that speak about me or what I do. So I do read I see what's going on, what's going around. Lose weight, you're going to earn my respect if you lose weight. I don't take you seriously because you're fat. Of course, we receive a lot of backlash because many people were told all their life, well, you have to be thin and that's how it is, or at least you have to be non-fat and that's how it is. And then I come and I say, well, you've been wrong all your life. I mean, of course, I'm going to get some pushback. But the thing is, people are still resistant. But on the other hand, we have a lot of people who are standing up. And I mean, nobody has anything to lose. No one has something to lose by signing this petition. Because people like me, fat people, can win. But people of regular, so-called regular size can also win, because they will lose that pressure that becoming fat is the worst thing that could happen in your life.
All right. Thank you so much for that. And I wish you all the best. 700 people have signed that petition. Can I just say some people are texting me, like somebody just texted me, oh my God, give me a break. Fat people are lazy. Processed food to make a microwave. Don't exercise. Stop making excuses. Yeah, I just think that's exactly what Edith is talking about. All right, lots coming up on the program. Do you think weight-based discrimination should be part of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms? 1-855-633-1010.
Now more of the Evan Solomon Show.
I got to tell you, folks, I have not seen the text board light up like this. So we just had Edith Bernier on. She has a website in Quebec called Fat Phobia, Grosse Phobia. And she said, I'm fat. She uses this term. I was openly uncomfortable saying that, so I'm going to use her term. She said, I'm fat, and we should be proud of it. But fat people, she said, again, her term, face discrimination, hatred, stereotypes, low wages, hard to get jobs, and she says it should be part of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And here's what she said.
It would mean that if someone loses their job, they're not hired for that or for a job simply because of their size and they can demonstrate it, that they can be protected by law, because right now we aren't. If someone receives health care of a lesser quality because of their size, and that's something that happens, doctors spend less time with their fat patients. So they could claim what's due, what belongs to them. We would have a better chance of becoming, of no longer being a second-class citizen.
So do you think weight-based discrimination should be part of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms? 1-855-633-1010. 1-855-633-1010. Now, this is really great. So on 71010, where you could text me, someone just said from the hammer, I'm 100 pounds overweight. That woman just made me feel amazing. Thank you. And then there's a lot of others that say this is a delusional person. Evan, she should take responsibility. She's a loser. Someone said, Michael from Cambridge, I spent the first 40 years of my life fat. Black is not a choice. Asian is not a choice. Gay is not a choice. Fat is a choice, he says. And then there's a lot of people saying, oh no, fat people are lazy. I'm just amazed people say that. But okay, what do you think about this? This has touched a nerve. People who are overweight, I can't bring myself to use the word fat. And I know she says I should. They face a lot of stigmas. Jeff, you're on the line. What's up?
Yeah, I think that, being overweight, first of all, it's just not healthy. But I do believe that everybody's metabolisms are different, and certain people have a lot harder time losing weight than other people. It's just the way you're born. There's nothing they can really do about it. But putting it under the Charter of Rights, it doesn't make any sense. It'd be like saying, well, there's a stigma against smokers. You know, I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense, and I'm sorry that she was bullied, and that's not right, right?
Yeah, I appreciate the call. Here's the thing, Jeff, and the existing laws should protect against discrimination based on weight, sex, gender, age. You understand? Like, there are already laws that I'm not 100% sure we necessarily need to include this because the laws should already prevent this. The fact, though, is it doesn't. Now, and if you're out there and you're overweight or you've been called, quote, obese, just tell me as well and call me at 1-855-633-1010. Edith said it's okay to use the word fat. She goes, I'm a fat woman. I thought that was a pejorative. Like, it's just not a word I would use, to be candid. Now, because I wouldn't want to stigmatize someone. Kim, you're on the line.
Hi. I have been an overweight person for the majority of my life. And I have recently lost 130 pounds over the last 18 months due to an illness. And I believe that my fat saved my life. And I went from a size 28 to a 10. I am the same person I was 130 pounds ago, and the way people treated me was disgusting. Now people look at me differently. People are nice to me. People don't look through me anymore. I am the exact same person I was 130 pounds ago. This woman is tremendously right. Everybody has a right to live without ridicule. The only difference between a person who is fat and a person who has a heart condition is you see what our issue is. You don't see someone who is an alcoholic. You don't see it. Fat people wear it every single day of their life. And I am disgusted that society is still shaming. It's ridiculous.
And you probably experienced that, as you say, firsthand. What do you say when people say it's a choice? Like, I'm getting a lot of texts. No, 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 this is a choice. If you're fat, you're lazy. What did you used to say to that, Kim?
It's not a choice. The reason why I was fat was because my mother was fat. My grandmother was fat. My aunts are fat. It's part of our genetic makeup. And yes, if I eat a little bit too much gravy on dinner, yeah, that is part of me contributing to it. But I don't like all these no-names people phoning up, saying that they're an expert in the health, saying that you're not healthy and everything else. I've seen skinny people have orthopedic issues. I've seen skinny people have back issues. I've seen skinny people dropped out of heart attacks. I weighed over 300 pounds, and I never had high blood pressure. Mm. I never had any issues with my heart, and I'm in my 50s.
Well, Kim, I appreciate your call, and what a powerful testament to what Edith is talking about, Kim. Thank you so much, and I want to get Helen on here. What's your story, Helen?
Hi, she's right. I've been heavy. I like the word heavy. I've been heavy my whole life. I lost 100 pounds. I gained it back. So I know both sides, and people do treat you differently. I have been fired for my weight.
You got fired for your weight?
Specifically fired.
What happened?
Because I didn't fit, they use the word fit the image.
Wow. How did that make you feel?
Well, what do you think?
Awful.
But you're not going to do anything. I was young. Now, I would fight.
Yeah.
I would really fight it out in court because it's illegal.
Yeah, well, you're right, it's illegal. But her story resonated with you, didn't it, Helen?
You bet it is. You bet it is. She's right. We are treated differently. No, I'm not lazy. I'm heavy. I'm not lazy. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. I've met lazy, skinny people.
Yep.
But we are treated like people treat you differently. You go to job interviews, and we call it the look. You get that 10 seconds in the door, and you know you might as well not sit down.
Someone just texted me, Helen, fat shaming is the last socially acceptable prejudice. Do you believe that?
Yes. Yes, it's true. It is a prejudice. It does exist. But skinny people who don't know what it's like will judge and shame and feel great about themselves because la-di-da, I'm skinny and I fit into a size 2.
Well, Helen,
I got no brains, but I fit into a size 2.
Helen, I appreciate your call. Thank you. And, you know, it's just...
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for being so candid about it. Someone just said to me, shame on you, Evan, for promoting unhealthy lifestyles. You know, I don't know who you are, but, before you decide, what the perfect health is and the perfect optimum health is, everyone's got their struggle. And weight is a really tough one for a lot of people in this culture. I'm not promoting any, I'm promoting smoking. But what I'm promoting is not shaming people for who they are. I'm just never going to do that, ever. I will never do that. Okay, I got to take a short break. Great calls, powerful calls. Coming up, there's a new law. Is it muzzling animal activists or saving farmers? Wait till you hear this next.